We're CJ and Q, and today we're talking with Yannick. We're talking with Yannick Doughty, and he's just returned from another adventure. And describe your adventure this time, Yannick.
Well, this was sort of my boldest yet, I think. I decided to go to northern Mongolia and follow the border with Siberia, about 1,000 kilometers. And the goal was really to only use muscle power, so I didn't want to use any kind of vehicle of any sort. So it was just me walking. I had a horse and a dog, and we just basically traveled for 1,000 kilometers in complete autonomy. So it took, the original plan was 6 weeks to complete the loop. It was a 1,000 kilometer loop, and because of a lot of sort of logistical problems and so on at the beginning, I started actually a week late. So the start was actually a pretty nervous start, because I didn't think I would have the time necessary to complete the loop if I really had to move every day. And but I ended up doing it in 5 weeks in the end, so in complete autonomy for 5 weeks in the wild, basically. You know, I carried all my food, all my survival gear, everything on the horse, and we basically left like that and followed the border with Siberia.
Okay, interesting. So that was the quest, to complete this.
Yes, yeah, yeah.
Okay.
To make it back, and it wasn't that obvious. The land I was traveling in is a land of nomads over there. The only people who live there are nomads. It's the least densely populated country on earth, Mongolia. So there's not many people, and the few that are there live basically from their horses and from their herds, and they live in these type of gurs. They move around all the time. There's no fixed, there's not a lot of fixed settlement. I passed two or three villages in 5 weeks.
Okay.
So it's a very remote area. Beautiful though.
Okay, I can imagine the vegetation, etc. Beautiful, because it's basically being untouched by modern man.
Yeah, that's it. It's pristine. I mean, you have snow-capped mountains, lakes, rivers. It's just the most beautiful landscape you could imagine. The steppes, also the Mongolian steppes, was, you know, just was like prairies going off, like rolling hills rolling off to the distance. Like, it's just, it's so beautiful. And it's something I really, one of the things I went to get out of it going there was really to feel that freedom, you know, sort of watching those Western movies, seeing the cowboys running off, riding off into the sunset type thing. And I had this dream in my head, and it was all that and more. I mean, I really felt that just freedom, and, you know, just traversing an untouched land. It was just beautiful. It was
okay. So this would be one of the things you took away from this experience, the incredible freedom, probably more than the other experiences you've had.
Yeah, just because there was no, you didn't feel like there was any kind of constraint or limits put on by society. It was basically just you and nature, and it was really something I was looking forward to. I've done a lot of expeditions before, and, you know, I've crossed the deserts and stuff, but it was never for this long, for 5 weeks.
Okay.
To be completely in the wild. So this was really something else there.
Okay, so 5 weeks with the horse and the dog that I assume you got when you got there.
Yes, yeah, okay. Yeah. I bought the horse from some nomads, and the dog just came along. He just came out of nowhere one day, and he was a dog that hunted for his own food and everything. So I didn't need to feed him. So that was great. I mean, I didn't have to worry about carrying food for him or anything. He hunted. He got these little squirrels and he ate them. So
that's amazing.
Yeah.
Okay, that's really amazing. What did you expect, and what maybe didn't you expect?
I mean, I had done a lot of research. Obviously, for something like this, you don't. Everything's in the preparation.
Mm-hmm.
I would not have made it back had I not been prepared like I was. And that's one of the big things with these types of expeditions. I had to plan every single meal for 6 weeks, right? I originally thought it was gonna be 6 weeks, so I had every single meal planned. I had all the gear I needed. For example, I knew it was an area with a lot of bugs, and I had a full body mosquito net that I brought, and I wore that 90% of the time. The bugs were so, it was just infested.
Mm-hmm.
Even though the scenery was beautiful, everything was, to appreciate it, you had to sort of get past the bugs, and that really actually that made the expedition success just something that simple. I had read of an expedition that had tried to do the same, something similar, and they had to turn back because of the bugs. The horses actually could not take it. Like, there were too many bugs, and so they had to turn back. And so that, and of course the terrain, a lot of research on the terrain before I left. But you know, as much research as you can do, it's never the same as once you get on the ground. You still
the real experience.
Oh yes, and like going through swamps, crossing rivers. I picked this area because there was a lot of water there. I wanted to travel in an area with a lot of water because I knew I couldn't carry enough water for myself and for the horse.
Okay.
And so there were a lot of river crossings, for example, and that was a challenge every time, right? One of the rivers, I mean, I had to, you couldn't cross it, you had to swim across, and so it was a logistical challenge every time, crossing rivers. But I think the worst were probably the swamps. I got in swampy area regularly, and I almost lost my horse three times going through the swamps, where he just sunk in, and I had to hold his head above the water and the mud, because it was he was going to drown. And so a lot of challenges just with the terrain.
Okay. Do you consider yourself a spiritual person?
I do, and but it has come from trips like these, and you can't dissociate. You can't go on something like this and not come back with something, with having been touched spiritually. I mean, it's I'm not religious, but I am spiritual, and I really feel something else when I'm going through an experience like this. When you're by yourself for 5 weeks, you know, not a single discussion with another human being. I mean, I pass nomads, but you know, it's a few words that I could manage to say or something, but no discussion. You're in your own head, walking every day, you know, going through impossible challenges, and also connecting with other beings like the horse and the dog. I had an amazing connection by the end of the trip. It was really, I don't know, we went through so many obstacles together. I felt like, you know, we could read each other, and I would talk to them, and it was quite an experience to bond like
it
this with something else. Yeah, with I mean, something other than the humans.
Yeah. Yeah, you must feel like those movies where you're the only surviving man on Earth, and sometimes.
yeah, you get that feeling sometimes. It's a bit, you know, you have to be ready for it. And luckily, I you know, having gone through deserts and through these type of trips before, I knew I could handle, for example, the solitude and all that, which was, I guess, a big challenge for, it would have been a big challenge for most people. But I knew for me, it was something that I'm completely comfortable with. You know, you can't help but get to a sort of deeper level in yourself, and when you go through experiences like that. So
You must. So you're living the life of a typical Mongolian person, I guess, for these weeks. But
yet
you're not equipped, like you haven't been seasoned, so you need protection from the bugs and everything. Is that correct? Because they don't?
Yeah, actually they do. They have they wear their traditional clothes, actually.
Okay.
Protects them from the bugs. And what I did is actually a step further than the traditional nomads. Traditional nomads usually, you know, they'll move every maybe 3-4 times a year.
Okay.
And they'll set up camp. I was moving every single day, and so there were a lot of extra challenges with that, obviously. And plus, you know, of course they've been there for generations. They know the land, you know, I mean, they know everything that one needs to know about doing something like that. So it was a very much a big challenge. And a lot of them, when I left off, the family I bought the horse from did not think I would come back with my horse. They were guaranteed the horse would not make it.
Okay.
And then and most of the nomads I passed afterwards, most of them didn't think also the horse would make it back. And some of them actually didn't think I would make it back. They said, you know, you can't, as a white, we would have a hard time doing something like that. And they said, as a white person, as a foreigner trying it, like, there's no way you're gonna make it. And but you know, we made it in the end. So I had a very tough horse, and I mean, the toughest horse in the world, that's how I called him, because he was really something else. He carried on his back 80 kilos every single day for 9-10 hours a day. And this is not like a horse you're riding where you get off and you get on, right? I put the packs on in the morning, and he kept them on for the whole day. So 80 kilos on his back, you know, it's over 200 pounds on his back for 9 hours a day, and day after day after day after day for 5 weeks, and going through swamps, going, at some point we had to go over a mountain pass with snow. You know, we were up to our knees in snow, and I mean, it's not, and then the heat and down in the valleys and the bugs and going through all that. I mean, he was just, I admired him every day.
Exactly. You must have had one built up horse by the end of the experience.
Yeah. Unfortunately, we had a lot of, also we ran, you know, we had injuries and stuff like that, and,
right.
and he wasn't, he also had an injury at some point on his back, and so I had to take care of that, and I'm sure that wasn't easy also.
Okay. But, you know. Interesting. So you've been on a lot of experiences, and you've discovered a lot of people. The more experiences, the more people you meet, do you find that humanity is more connected and similar than the average person might think?
Yeah, I find what I guess from my travels, what I take out of it is really the richness of humanity. How you know, we tend to be stuck in one culture, and I mean, most people who just live within a certain place and be stuck in this culture and don't realize how rich the diversity of humankind is. Mm-hmm. And there's so much to learn from so many of these cultures. And I mean, for me, it's a huge learning experience about life, about better ways to live, about ways to respect your environment and ways to respect other people. And every single time I go on one of these trips, I take something back amazing from a culture that, and you know, and this is, I just do this, what, twice a year, something like that. And like, and I know if I would do it, I mean, there's so many, I will never in my lifetime be able to meet all of them, mm-hmm. but every single one of them has something amazing to bring. And and you do find also some connections between cultures, like some in traditional cultures, especially, you know, the hospitality and things like that are just beautiful to see. I mean, the Mongolian people, they have one of these rules in their gers, in their tents that they use to live in. When you get there, you never knock on the door before going in. They say that's not respectful. As soon as you get in, you're supposed to just step in and sit down. And you don't knock, you don't let yourself know, because you're expected. Hospitality is so much part of the culture that people are expected to do this. So when you get into a ger, you just get right in and sit down. You don't say anything, and then you get served tea and cookies, and it's the most amazing thing.
That is amazing. Mm. Amazing hospitality. So you're always accepted wherever you go. That's amazing too.
Yes.
There's more humanity, more kindness than there is curiosity and negative feelings, I guess.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. They're not at all, I've never felt, with any of the nomads I've talked, I never felt any kind of, it was more, more of a kind of, curiosity and hospitality than anything negative at all. Like, it was always, for example, they would I met this medicine man, and he started touching my face, and he found you know, he started pointing to his nose and to my nose, and he found it weird that, you know, because they have a nose that's mm-hmm. flatter, and that mm-hmm. mine would stick out more.
Okay.
And he looked at my hands, and he was amazed to see I had the same lines as him in the hands, like, you know, we're part of the same race, you know, like mm-hmm. looking at the hands. And and so there was a lot of curiosity like that, but it was also, but it was always with the best of intention of welcoming me into their culture. And and that was just, I mean, I know Mongolian legendary Mongolia's hospitality is legendary, and that really proved it to me. And I find that's often the case in the most the harshest places, the most the places that are the hardest to live in. People are more hospitable in those places, because I guess it's a matter of survival for them.
Okay, learning to appreciate each other and depend on each other.
Yes, and help each other, yeah.
Right,
yeah.
Okay. And every adventure you go on, you come away with a certain goal to help the people in the region?
Yes, yeah.
And what about this time?
This time, the cause I took up is child prisoners in Mongolia. And the region I was in, the sort of the capital, the town that's sort of the capital of that district, is where I started, and when I finished my expedition was there. And I went to visit the only prison that's the only prison for the whole region. And they have they keep children in there, and women, and they have a cell for each, and the cells are in awful condition. I mean, it's inhumane to see how they're living. They don't get any light. They have this little grid on top, like high up on top, and that's the only place that light comes in from. They don't have any electricity. And so you get light just when the sun hits it directly, and the air, there's no ventilation system, and the walls are not finished, the ground is not finished. It looks just awful. And and so I decided to rebuild the two cells to make them nicer for the women and for the children.
Okay.
So I set up the project there when I was there with a woman there that has a local NGO. Mm-hmm. And so I'm going to use my film that I'm going to present next week for on Saturday for to raise money to rebuild that. And I'm going to raise money through selling the DVDs.
That's a wonderful goal. You have two presentations coming up at Centennial Theater, and it's the
Tiger Quest.
Okay. So the film is going to run on two different days, so that's great. If somebody can't make it to the first one, they can make it to the second one. And would you like to tell us what days they're running?
Yes, it's on Saturday, November 21st.
Okay.
And Wednesday, November 25th at 7 p.m. at the Centennial Theater.
Okay, both at 7 p.m. Now, they're free, but I would imagine that you would more than accept donations.
Absolutely. I'm making it free because I think I want to try and reach as many people as I can.
Right.
So I'd like just for people to be aware of the causes, and also because the film is launching Social Justice Week on campus.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to talk about that, and I just want to have as many people aware of it as possible. So it's free. Anybody can come in. And then obviously I'm going to ask people at the end if they'd like to buy the DVD. And I'm going to explain the cause that all the money is going to go towards. And hopefully as many people as possible can buy the DVD so we can rebuild those prison cells.
You had a great number of people that came to the presentation last year. So I'm sure after seeing the one last year that you'll have as many this year.
Yeah, I'm hoping. Last year's presentation, A Safe Journey, was... it was just incredible, the feedback I got from it and the attendance and everything. So I'm really hoping for something similar, yes.
Okay, and can we buy the DVD right after the film?
Yes.
That's interesting.
I'm going to have the DVDs right there.
Okay, and how much are they?
$10.
Okay, that's a good price. Great.
Yep.
Now, you spend a lot of time doing the film, too. I guess you were just by yourself, so you were the only one.
Yeah, that was a huge challenge. Not only the expedition itself was hard, obviously, it was a pretty daunting task to realize. But on top of it, deciding to bring my camera, all the filming gear, and filming the whole thing,
mm-hmm.
was like basically multiplied the thing by two, like the toughness mm-hmm. of it. Not only did I have to move across rivers, you know, go through swamps, deal with everything every day, but sometimes I had to do it three times because I would have to go set up the camera, go back, take the horse, move, come back, get the camera, and put it back on the horse, and I had to do that all the time, constantly by myself. It wasn't easy, and I had already done a documentary film like this on a bicycle expedition, and at least, you know, the bicycle doesn't move around on its own.
Mm-hmm.
The horse does, and you can't control the horse as well, and the dog as well as you can control the bike, you know, for getting the right shot or whatever. So it was sometimes it took a long time to film just one scene. Like if it's a scene I really wanted,
mm-hmm.
I mean, I could spend half an hour there or 40 minutes just like setting it up. And so that was a huge challenge because I had to survive. I had to get to the plane to get it, make my camp, you know, start cooking and, you know, get ready for the night, take care of the horse and all that. And on top of it, I had to take care of all the filming. So it was a huge challenge.
It was a challenge, yeah.
I'm so happy with the final product. I thought it was all worth it.
That's great. That's a great feeling. And I watched the trailer. Would you like to give everybody the address to get to the website and see
sure.
the trailer?
Yeah, if you'd like to see the trailer, you can go to my website, postcardsfromtheedge.ca. And there's a link on the left that says Tiger Quest, the trailer. You just click on that. So Postcards from the Edge, all in one word, .ca.
Okay, and the trailer, it's empowering, and yet at the same time, it's light, it's funny. Definitely really original.
Yeah, that's sort of how I approach life in general. You know, I like to take on very serious issues and talk about all these things, but I always take it in a light way myself. You know, I don't get too serious about myself or what I do.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's really what comes out in the film and in the trailer. Like, the trailer will give you a real idea of what the film is about. It's very lighthearted. And even though, you know, there are some moments that are extremely intense, I know when I watch them, my heart beats and I'm like on the edge of my chair, mm-hmm. still now watching it.
Mm-hmm.
I just remember the moment and stuff. But most of it is I'm just myself, like I approach life in general. And it's in a very positive and just light way. So.
Okay.
Yeah, that's what the
great way to be. And I guess what I took away from the trailer too, one of the things is people keep asking you, why do you do this?
Yes. Yeah, I guess that answer is in the trailer. Yeah, why do I do it? But I get, you know, I've been getting the answer for a while, and you know, it comes from a passion, I guess, and from the fact that I realized that doing things like this is not only good for myself, like it allows me to to get to become a better person, I think, and to realize mm-hmm. a lot of things about life that when you're sort of always in your comfortable environment and surrounded always by the same things and so on, that you can't get out of it, and you can't sort of see yourself in another, from another angle. And that allows me to do that a lot, and to challenge myself and to always push my limits. And at the same time, I realize that doing things like this allows me to have a great impact on people, because people are not used to seeing people or to talking to people who take on these types of challenges, and they're very much inspired by it. And I found that a lot with my last presentation last year. You know, I have students now going to Uganda on a regular basis because I went, and because I set up this project at, you know, at this orphanage, and they've been inspired by it. And so every year now I'm sending, I mean, I have two group already that left, that went, and I have a third group. I'm working on a third group now to leave there. And I realized that I can have a bigger impact on the world by sharing my experiences, and that's all I can hope for. I mean, I'm just trying to make as much as I can, and, you know, it may be a small difference, but it is a difference. So still the childhood dream of, you know, changing mm-hmm. the world. That's mm-hmm. that's where I'm at right now. So I'm just gonna keep trying to do it, and I realize that by doing these things, I can inspire people, and if that works, then that's all I can hope for.
That's wonderful. And you are a professor. That's your day job. And I think one of the greatest things you can do teaching is to teach your students that I can instead of I can't, or maybe I can. But yeah, you teach them I can, which is fantastic.
I hope so. I hope they take that out of seeing and hearing about my my lifestyle. Yes.
That's great. Well, obviously, if you have a lot going to these places and trying to make a difference, that's extremely important. Okay. So you return to the townships. When you return, do you feel like, oh, I can finally let down my guard, a comfortable lifestyle here? And why the townships? You could live anywhere you wanted to. You weren't born in the townships, so...
No,
why pick the townships?
No, I picked the townships specifically. I love this area. You know, I've traveled all over the world, but I've always thought that in order to appreciate anything, you have to leave it and come back to it and stuff. And I do want to have a place that I feel comfortable in, where everything is just the way that I hope it to be. And, you know, I love my job. I live in a great place in Lenoxville. You know, if you look behind my place, basically, like the I'm just in the in the country. I just have a forest. I have a stream on my property. I do dog sledding from my house every day in winter. I leave from my house with my dog and we go dog sledding. I cycle everywhere. I cycle to work. I cycle to do the groceries. Mm-hmm. I don't need to. I don't have a car right now. And I it's just the perfect lifestyle. And so I've always wanted a base like this, like a base to leave from and do my things, but always come back to this one place that I love. And I've learned to love this place now, and it's my home.
That's great. Good. Anything else you wanted to mention before we go, Yannick?
Just, I guess, for the film, I would like, obviously, as many people to get there as possible. It is for a great cause in the end, and that's what matters to me. So not only I'm pretty sure you're gonna have a pretty entertaining time coming to see the film, but at the same time, hopefully we can help those children, those women in they're living in horrible conditions. So please try to come as many as possible to
okay.
the film.
And there's two times. Just remind our listeners again when they are.
On Saturday, November 21st at 7 p.m. and Wednesday, November 25th at 7 p.m. at the Centennial Theater. And again, if you'd like to watch the trailer, it's on postcardsfromtheedge.ca.
Okay, and I recommend everybody take a look at that. It's a lot of fun. Very empowering. Okay, thank you very much. You go,